You're listening to Global Talk Radio.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in to A Story to Tell here at GlobalTalkRadio.com. We have a great program ahead of you today, an exclusive interview with David Powell. He is the author of My Tour in Hell, A Marine's Battle with Combat Trauma. He will recount to us firsthand his experiences both in the battlefield in Vietnam in the 1960s, as well as the impact that has had on his life. But most importantly, he'll tell us how he eventually recovered. Stay tuned. David will be with us for the entire hour, and we'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to Global Talk Radio.
And welcome back to A Story to Tell here at GlobalTalkRadio.com. I am excited about today's exclusive guest. He is David Powell, who enlisted for a tour of duty in April 1966 with the U.S. Marines after receiving an imminent draft notice. Believing he would be able to leverage his existing skills as a computer programmer, he never thought that all they would see on his resume was his karate expertise. Even less that he would wind up serving as a rocket man in the jungles of Vietnam for a 13-month tour in hell. David's journey, as detailed in his book, My Tour in Hell, A Marine's Battle with Combat Trauma, takes him from naive civilian to battle-hardened combat veteran and shows us all how fragile our humanity really is. In addition to killing the enemy on the field of battle, he was witness to countless cruelties, including murder, both cold-blooded and casual, cowardice under fire, and a callous disregard for life beyond most people's imagination. With each new insult, he lost a little bit of his soul, clinging to his Bible as his only solace, equally certain of his own demise. Upon returning to civilian life after a two-year enlistment, he found himself with nightmares during sleep, intrusive thoughts while awake, a hypervigilant stance combined with an exaggerated startle reaction, and a seeming inability to control basic emotions like anger and sadness. The price he paid for what would only be diagnosed decades later as post-traumatic stress disorder was broken marriages and relationships, inability to hold down jobs which led to bankruptcy, alcohol abuse, and having to hide the service he willingly gave to his own country. In 1989, David eventually recovered through a simple but powerful technique known as Traumatic Incident Reduction, TIR, and is now symptom-free. Not just for veterans, TIR has been successfully applied to crime and motor vehicle accident victims as well, plus domestic violence survivors, and even children. His story shows what is possible for anyone who has suffered dramatic stress and that hope, healing, and recovery can be theirs too. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kevin. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, David, once again, thank you so much for joining us, and I personally want to extend my gratitude for all the personal sacrifices that you made some 40 years ago so that all of us could enjoy freedom and liberty today.
I'm touched, and I thank you very much.
Now, give us an overview of your journey as written down in your book, My Tour in Hell, A Marine's Battle with Combat Trauma.
Certainly. My memoir describes my combat experiences in Vietnam in straightforward, no-holds-barred detail. The reader will observe the transformation of a peaceful, naive guy into a battle-experienced hunter of human beings. The reader will also see how my collection of traumatic experiences impaired my emotional and social behavior to a great degree. I did find loving resolution through traumatic incident reduction, and it's had a positive effect on my life after treatment.
Now, here we are, 40 years after the fact, but I know it's been a long road to recovery for you. What inspired you to put this down in a book?
When there was two reasons. The first was a rather simple one. It was an invitation to write my memoir with the help of my friend and practitioner of TIR, Gerald French. Gerald thought it would be a good idea to write a memo that was co-authored by a client and his practitioner. Shortly after starting the project, we lost contact with one another. I was extremely fortunate to connect with my now editor and friend, Mr. Victor Volkman, who greatly influenced the format and content of my book. Kevin, the other much more strong reason was my observation of our brave military service members going to Afghanistan and Iraq, then returning home to loved ones and friends in silence to our nation who disapproves of our war efforts. I know their pain and despair when they come home and they're not embraced and asked, "What happened to you?" I wanted desperately to speak for them, for I believe combat and trauma experiences are the same, regardless when or where it happens.
And that's a very good point. And that leads me then into our next topic, which would be post-traumatic stress disorder. Tell us a little bit about what that is, what causes it, and how does it change a person?
Do what I can there. In 1980, post-traumatic stress disorder was recognized by the psychiatric community. But before that, it was referred to as like war neurosis or shell shock. There's a book that they follow called the Diagnostic and Statistics Manual, abbreviated DSM. And in version 4, I'll try to summarize the evaluation. It begins saying, person has been exposed to a traumatic event which contained, 1, an actual or threatened death or serious injury, and 2, their response involved intense fear. Just a quick diversion, Kevin. That doesn't have to happen in the course of fighting for one's life. I think you could get trapped in an elevator and have a traumatic experience or startled in a darkened room. The DSM goes on to say that the event is persistently re-experienced. Recurrent distressing recollections of the event and or dreams of the event and or a sense of reliving the event. And it goes on a list a lot longer. It ends with delayed onset when the symptoms are at least 6 months after the stressor. Give you my version if you have the patience.
Sure.
I committed horrific acts and watched others do the same. All of them were outside the range of ordinary human living. My life as a common citizen, living a common life, was forever compromised.
Well, with that as a backdrop, when you came back from your tour in hell in Vietnam, did you know immediately that you were suffering from PTSD?
I didn't, nor did anyone else, frankly. I knew that I had learned many, many terrible things no one should know, but I kept them to myself for fear of being reprimanded.
Mm.
I returned to civilian life in 1968, and as I mentioned, it wasn't even recognized as a disorder until 1980.
Well, I'm going to ask you a rather personal question, and feel free only to answer it to the extent that you're comfortable.
Thank you.
But what were some of your personal experiences with PTSD that you do talk about in My Tour in Hell?
Okay. To name a few things, during my service, I was attacked by the enemy, struck dumb with mortal fear, killed civilians and the enemy, burned down living quarters, and watched death occur before my very eyes. As a civilian, I was a terrible employee, a less than perfect intimate mate, a poor manager of money, an alcohol abuser, a bitter conversationalist, and, in my own opinion, a frightening man to be around.
Now, the funny thing, as I mentioned in the intro, is that when you originally enlisted for your tour of duty in 1966, you didn't think that you'd ever see combat action.
Yeah, that is so true. I thought that my skills as a data processor, being able to program computers and the like, which was very leading edge at the time, would have been well received, and I would have probably remained stateside for the 2 years of my enlistment. I think they were looking for more wood to put in the cannon.
Well, let's bring listeners up into when you were on the battlefield. What were some of the hard lessons and knocks that you took specifically as the new guy?
Okay, thank you. Kevin, the first time I was shot at, I froze, standing in a high crouch, which made myself a prime target for more enemy fire.
Mm-hmm.
Then I learned that life had no value, having witnessed callous murder. Each day in Vietnam was all more of the same. Isolation, constant fear of dying, distrust and dislike of superiors, aversions to developing any meaningful relationships with my fellow combatants, and so on. There were no safe spaces and no sure allies over there. By the 8th week of my tour, I was a seasoned combat Marine. I knew how to take care of myself and my equipment. I knew how to scrounge for my own food, clothing, ammunition, and supplies. I held feelings of abandonment by my comrades, to name a few.
And how did your opinion about the practice of killing change throughout the war and beyond?
I was fighting in Nam to free the South Vietnamese from the North Vietnamese. I had justified to myself that if I had to kill people in combat, then so be it. I killed at least five people. Each one I killed was during a combat setting, but my personal safety was not in jeopardy at any time. It wasn't a question of kill or be killed. I'm a strong Christian. Thou shalt not kill means a lot to me. I had done that, though. I was afraid of my rage, for I knew that I could kill someone without hesitation, to include altercations well beyond my war years.
And then tell us about the day when an M-20 rocket launcher fizzled with a live rocket next to your head. That must have been traumatic in itself.
It was very, and it's etched in my brain like a finely cut diamond. I was ready to fire a white phosphorus round at the direction of my squad leader. I felt him, whose name was Jones, thump on my head and heard him scurry for cover off to my left. That was a signal that I was ready to fire. I squeezed the trigger, but all I heard was a loud click and a low sizzling noise in my right ear. The rocket had misfired. I looked at Jones. He stared back at me, his eyes as big as black baseballs. He yelled, "Hang fire." Hang fire means the rocket was armed, stuck in the tube, and could explode at any minute. Jones and every man who heard him got up from their positions and ran away from me, leaving me alone and in the open. "I'm going to die," I thought. I stayed crouched. Minutes, which seemed like hours, slowly ticked off. Eventually, Jones came back and took the rocket off my shoulder. Horrible event.
And that probably gave you an unfortunate lesson of how these fellow Marines were going to support each other in such a critical time of need?
That's exactly what imprinted. I saw them run when I was told they would run toward me. Instead, I was abandoned.
Now tell us how you earned your Purple Heart.
I was on an afternoon patrol near the hill that we occupied in July. At that time, in the mid-afternoon, we got ambushed by the VC. I had an unusual experience that happened several more times. This one I'll go into. It was a slow-motion experience. My mind started recording every second as it ticked by. Unbelievably, I saw a bullet moving about 1 inch per second from my left to my right, grazing the back of the man in front of me. As it inched its way across the back of his flak jacket, I could see it ripping through the cloth. It looked like a thread was slowly being pulled out of his jacket. I was staring, amazed. my hypnotic state ended when I was shot in the chest. For that, I got a Purple Heart.
And this is truly an amazing story. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to learn more about David's traumatic experiences and how it has affected his life, but ultimately, how he was able to cure himself from post-traumatic symptom. We're speaking with David Powell. He is the author of My Tour in Hell, a Marine's Battle with Combat Trauma, and listeners can follow along at this website, which is at www.lovinghealing.com/mytourinhell. And we'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to Global Talk Radio.
And welcome back to A Story to Tell here at GlobalTalkRadio.com. We are speaking today with David Powell. He is the author of My Tour in Hell, A Marine's Battle with Combat Trauma. David, tell us a little bit about Kenny Haas and your relationship with him during the war.
He was a sweet boy. Kenny was a very gentle giant, about 19, maybe 20 years old, and I took to him immediately. He was very naive, much like I was. I took him under my wing and began worrying about his safekeeping while he was in Nam. However, I knew I had made a cardinal mistake, for I had vowed to myself to never make friends in Nam. With a heavy heart, Kevin, I tell you that Kenny's childlike innocence caught up with him. One evening at dusk, some Viet Cong assaulted a bridge we guarded, and they killed Kenny. Cut him in half with a rocket-propelled weapon.
You know, with seeing so many of these things firsthand and hearing about even more secondhand, what sort of coping strategies did you develop to get by day-to-day in this war zone?
I kept my weapons meticulously clean. At the time I started my tour, I had an M14 rifle. And the other guys adopted the name of Lone Ranger because it was so clean and shiny. When I was in the field, I was constantly in a hypervigilant state. I remained aloof from all other comrades right from the start. My sense of humor was squeezed out of existence. I thought everything and everybody was dangerous, and I behaved that way. I was in a survival mode.
Now, the combat troops had some sort of rest and relaxation. Is that right?
They did, in the form of the title rest and recuperation.
Mm. Okay. So a slightly different R&R than we might expect. Did it help you wind down from the chaos of the battlefield, or was it more like a reminder of the world that you had left behind?
With embarrassment, I tell you that I did my winding down by drinking until I was in a stupor on my R&R, trying to forget where I had just come from and where I was going after this escape ended. The civilian world was completely foreign to me. I felt no part of it was mine. I knew that I was going to die before my tour ended.
Now, how old were you in 1966 when you started your tour of duty?
25.
And were you married at that time?
I was married close to 4 years.
Did you have any kids yet?
No. But we had hoped to before this war business came up. And before I had left, we had looked forward to creating a family afterward.
Now, what were your expectations about your marriage before the war, and how did the war change your marriage?
Well, before the war, I expected to remain married for a lifetime. I knew that my career in data processing was going to be fun, financially rewarding, and that I would be a successful businessman and husband. After being on R&R with my then wife, I knew that our relationship was emotionally dead. I was still naive and full of wonder. So was she. What I hid was my scarred and full of hatred and fear soul.
Now, the good news is that you did eventually begin healing from your combat trauma.
Amen.
Tell us how that got started. What was the catalyst?
Well, initially I had sought help from the Veterans Administration, specifically the Mental Health Center in Menlo Park, California. It started this way. A few months prior to that, I had sought help for another botched relationship at a community VA vet center. I went there once, talked, and left with no help or relief for my pain. I was invited to attend a talking group of combat experienced veterans once a week for over 16 months, which I attended and then gave up on the VA when I found that something that worked to make me feel better, rather than leaving the group sessions feeling worse and worse about my plight. I found TIR. I underwent treatment for my traumas at the Metapsychology Institute in California in 1988, some 20 years.
Well, when had you received that original invitation from the VA? Was that back in the 60s?
No, it was around 1986.
Oh, so then for it was 20 years before they even before they recognized the condition and they came seeking to help you in any manner. But, I mean, 20 years you were on your own until that point?
Right, and the only way they knew I was on the planet, Kevin, was the fact that I went to a vet center and they noted that I was combat experienced and then started a group some 3 or 4 months later at the VA.
Well, tell us more about TIR and how it's helped you along your healing journey.
Happy to, in a layman's way, and it's experiential rather than textual. TIR is a person-centered technique. There is a practitioner who guides a session, if you will, and the goal is aligned exactly with the goals of the client. They begin each session with a simple question. What do you want to address today? Which is really comforting rather than having a feeling of being assaulted by a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on providing a safe environment. There's no evaluation of the client's experience as good, bad, or indifferent. The purpose of the practitioner is to be with the client when he relives the experience several times. Each time, the client bleeds off a little more emotional charge. It gets easier and easier to hold traumatic thoughts in your mind, Kevin. Once there is a resolution by a re-experiencing of the trauma, there's a profound sense of completion. It helped me, and I'm sure others, gain a wonderful insight into what life really is like. It's a one-on-one technique. It's not like being debriefed, sitting in a group of people, mentally answering the same questions. It's not hypnotic. I remained in complete control of all of my faculties at all times. competition they're directed in the, in that you follow instructions from the practitioner, but you're not compelled to do such a thing. Without undergoing treatment, I think that my suicidal ideation would have become a reality, and we would have not been talking for this interview.
Well, let's talk about another way that this has helped you. When you came back from your tour in hell, I understand you had 18 different employers in the span of just 10 years. Well, after TIR, did you notice those relationships and relationships with people in general had improved?
Very much so. I learned instead of taking reprimand or criticism as a personal attack, and bear in mind that attack of any form before I got help was life-threatening in my mind. After TIR, if I wasn't doing what an employer thought I should be doing, we could casually discuss it and adopt a new approach that was more satisfactory to the superior and in compliance with what I thought I should do. One major change.
Now, what kinds of things can you do or experience now that you could not do before traumatic incident reduction?
I have re-engaged in life. I can meet strange people, people I don't know, and embrace them mentally as though they are friend, not foe. My reticence to engage in social behavior and social activities, which made me aloof and alone, are now amusing things to look at. I can enter, I think, any social setting, strike up a conversation, and carry it in a comfortable way to a happy conversation. That's two examples. I can also love again.
You know, in addition to the TIR process, I think also a lot of credit has to go to you as an individual for being aware, I think, of the trauma that you had experienced and how it was affecting your life, and being willing to take the steps necessary to improve your life and to reach out to others. And I would ask, even further beyond that, were there other factors that contributed to your recovery process?
I think that I emotionally embraced the fact that I could be not cured, but healed. I could close some open wounds, mental wounds. I was very motivated to get a good night's sleep. And so by embracing the belief that I wasn't in constant harm's way and that it was safe to take even small chances, my whole life opened up for me again.
Now, you mentioned earlier that when you went off to combat, you considered yourself to be a strong Christian. In fact, you mentioned the commandment, thou shalt not kill.
Right.
How did your religious beliefs change over the years, and did they come back to help you through this difficult time?
They came back. Actually, Kevin, they never left. There were episodes of regret and remorse, and a fear that I had lost any invitation to go to heaven. But I turned instead to a more strengthening of my faith. And though I kept it to myself, I found solace in daily prayer and thanksgiving.
What things has your journey of healing taught you?
That emotional trauma, as opposed to physical trauma, can be brought back to a wholeness It's not like losing a limb.
Mm-hmm.
It's like losing an ability to be a human being embracing the human experience.
Mm-hmm.
I found that to be a very big win. The scars are not even mentally visible. Things that don't make sense to me at the time they happen, I have a way to process them and put them in a less traumatic area of my recall.
We're going to take a short break. Again, we're speaking with David Powell. He is the author of My Tour in Hell, A Marine's Battle with Combat Trauma. And when we come back, I'm going to ask David, I'm going to bring him up here now to 2006 and ask what his opinion is on patriotism and service in the military. So we'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to Global Talk Radio.
And welcome back to A Story to Tell here at GlobalTalkRadio.com. We are speaking with David Powell. He is the author of My Tour in Hell, A Marine's Battle with Combat Trauma. And as promised before the break, David, I want to ask you, with so many military conflicts going on in the world today, what are your current thoughts regarding military service, patriotism, and going to war in general?
I believe that the United States military services provide our young men and women with excellent resources for their individual growth. Self-confidence, understanding, and obeying orders or instructions. Physical well-being and camaraderie are but a few benefits. I am patriotic to a high degree and will remain so, regardless how I was treated after my combat tour ended. Were I a younger man and asked to go to war again, I would go. This time, it goes without saying, I would be far, far better prepared for the experience. In part, that's what I wanted to tell folks via my book. Those who are about to go would benefit by reading what they might experience. Those who are returning would benefit by reading that their experiences are not unique and they are not alone. In my opinion, TIR tools would make a huge contribution to the mental health of combatants, both going into or subsequently, and those who are returning, as well as the family members and close friends.
40 years later, do you still feel any of the effects of PTSD?
I do, Kevin. That's something that goes along with embracing the human condition.
It never completely goes away.
Doesn't. Some things just don't go away. For instance, I cry spontaneously when I am emotionally touched. I have an extreme fear of high places. I have a heightened state of arousal in crowds and in open spaces. That's mostly what I feel.
Now, we touched on this before, but let me ask you directly. How has your spirituality and faith played a part in your life? Now, we've talked about what it was like to have to participate in the ugly battle scenes despite your faith. And now that you've returned home, I know your spirituality, as you said, it was with you all the time, but perhaps you've developed it even farther. And has it also played an important role throughout your healing journey?
Yes, it has. Thanks for asking. I believe that in war, my life and limbs were spared because of my belief in God. I believe that I didn't commit suicide because God wouldn't want me in his house if I did, and that I was meant to do something good for my fellow human beings. Hopefully, that's answered by my book. I walk with the Spirit in front of me and beside me.
You describe this time of the 60s as your tour in hell. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. I've never really understood why they call it a tour of duty in the first place. But when you are killing human beings in combat situations, you're in a war, plain and simple. Victor and I ultimately chose that title because it's something that resonates immediately with veterans. It's got a thinly ironic twist. Some other veterans of the current conflicts have adopted the My Tour in Hell without ever being exposed to the book.
Well, how about current conflicts? Do you think that the young men who might be enlisting in the voluntary military today have any idea as to what they may see in the field and what they might experience while on duty, let alone how it may change the rest of their lives?
Emphatically, no. I think that much more training is needed here. Honesty is crucial, and they must be given that.
Now, although your book and your story is set in the Vietnam era of the 60s, it is, again, very relevant today, perhaps more so than it has even been since then. Now, what should the soldiers and families of recruits in the Middle East be expecting when they come back home?
My greatest fear for family members of returning veterans and the veterans themselves is that they will suppress their pain in the hope that they will get better on their own without education and community support. I know that to be false.
And are there any signs that they may see within themselves that should be warning signals that they are not coping well?
I'd suggest a few things to watch for. One is a sudden startle reaction that's over-exaggerated. I used a clumsy way of expressing it by getting a short neck at the sound of a loud noise, where the head descends into the shoulders.
Uh-huh.
I would say that sleeplessness, nightmares, whether they're remembered and recalled upon awakening or not, is another sign. I would say that feeling unloved and unappreciated to an adverse degree would be another sign. I think that staying alone, avoiding making friends or intimate acquaintances would all be hallmarks that say that person is crying for help.
Now, who all would you recommend should read your book?
Thanks. Egotistically, each and every person. on a truly.
You know, it's funny, but then again, there's actually an element of truth in that, because it's not just war veterans, but people have had dramatic experiences in other ways in their lives. But yes, please go ahead with that thought.
Car accidents, anything that is out of the range of ordinary human experience, I classify as a trauma, holding with that classification. If the trauma isn't resolved and the person who experienced it cannot successfully cope with day-to-day experiences, or the re-experiencing of the trauma needs help. I'd like to think that any military veteran or trauma survivor from any era would find the book interesting and validating. Their close friends and family members would learn what it's really like to go through ugly stuff. Mental health professionals should read my book. just what may be going on in the recesses of the client who sits in front of them.
You know, that's a good point, too.
Oh, thank you.
That's a very good point. Now, what are you ultimately trying to convey to your readers through my tour in hell?
Ultimately, I wanted to show my readers what it was like to be in combat, to understand how traumatic experiences can harm people, and that there is validity in hoping that they can and will get better and go on to live great, productive lives.
Well, again, David, this will never be completely out of your mind, nor, I guess, should it be. It has become part of you, but at least you've managed to move forward. You now have a very productive life.
I do.
Tell us a little bit about what your life is like today. What are your hobbies and interests right now, and what are you working on next?
Oh, thanks. I love to prepare and cook meals. It's an odd thing. It's almost a form of meditation for me. I do quite a bit of focusing on what they call prep work, which is the preparation of meals, components, before I start the cooking. In fact, I've got a collection of recipes in a computer book form that I'm constantly adding to.
Hey, your data processing interest came into play.
I guess they're doing a little database, kind of. But I'm glad to be away from that fast-moving pace. I'm developing a different approach to answer the question, how do I improve my self-esteem? I hope to starting to write about this in the near future. It's going to be based in my interpretation of the Maslow pyramid.
Please tell listeners what they can find at your website. Again, that's thelovinghealing.com/mytourinhell.
Yes, it is.
Tell us what they can find there.
People that haven't even bought the book can get a good flavor for it. They can find the foreword by Tom Joyce. They can find my preface and an excerpt from Chapter 2 just by going to the website. People who buy the book will find a special, I think it's called URL address.
Exactly.
While there they can find bonus materials which were not included in the book, which includes my early childhood through the end of high school and the beginnings of my career in computers before enlisting. We made that part of the site private because it was boring to read it in the front of the book, and it didn't have any context to what I was really trying to say.
Just gives us a little bit more background on who you are and where you were coming from?
Yeah, the little boy that went to war.
Rumor has it that you are going to be making some public appearances. Tell us about that.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it's going to be fun. Coming in October the 13th through the 15th in San Diego is going to be the first annual conference of a years-old society. The society is called Military Writers Society of America. Title of it is Salute to the Military Book Fest and Conference. Again, that's middle of October. Also, this came out of the blue, Kevin. During the month of October, I'll be appearing on a web channel TV show. It's called Recon, R-E-C-O-N.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a part of the Pentagon channel. It's going to be a half-hour interview of me with one of their senior staff.
How exciting.
I know, it's overwhelming. But they're going to run it after editing. The nature of the conversation is about what we have talked about, post-traumatic stress disorder, and some ways to get around it, get through it, frankly. It's going to be, I think I said a half hour, and it's going to run for 30 consecutive days. So I'm real tickled.
Wow, that's fantastic news. You know, David, it's hard to believe we're actually out of time already.
What a flight.
I have so much enjoyed our discussion today, and I've learned already so much about what you've gone through, both in the battlefield and what you've gone through in the four decades since then, coping with and learning and becoming a bigger and stronger person than you probably ever imagined you would be today.
but thank you for that compliment.
And again, we have been speaking with David Powell. I consider him to be a true hero. He is also the author of My Tour in Hell, A Marine's Battle with Combat Trauma. And the website, again, where you can find more information about him and his book is at www.lovinghealing.com/mytourinhell. And David, thanks again so much for taking time out of your day to share your story with us.
Kevin, it was an absolute pleasure, and I enjoyed your conversation and questions and your remarks, and thank you for the compliments.
You're listening to Global Talk Radio.